The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.
Welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show, sponsored by AIB. Lads, there was a media event yesterday. Now, it was a hurling event, but I whinge about interviews on the hurling show so much, I want to whinge about it on the football show because I think people are tired of listening to me on the hurling show. Now, I might bring it up as well on the football show or the hurling show, but Richie Hogan and Shamie Callanan were promoting new hurleys, Reynolds hurleys, they're composite hurleys. Now, this isn't the important point. And they were brought in front of the media yesterday at the Reynolds hurley launch. Now, I'm not sure if Richie and Shamie have skin in the game, in the business or anything, but they're involved in it, whether it's promoting it, whatever. They weren't allowed to speak to the media about hurling at the media event. Therefore, there was no coverage of neither Reynolds hurlers, hurls, their new hurls in the media today. There was no quotes from Richie or Shamie promoting the league quarterfinals in hurling. And the papers are being dominated by rugby and by soccer at the moment, and here's an opportunity of arguably the two best hurlers in the country to promote hurling. Everybody talks about promoting the game, and their two county managers are not allowing them to speak about a game. Lads, this has gone too far now. This is just the pinnacle now. I hope that this example sets off alarm bells in the GAA. They need to promote their games. County managers have too much control. This is in, we're still in March here.
It's far too much control, there's no doubt about it. And they're launching a product that is directly involved in their own game, yet they're not allowed to speak about their games. So, you know, it's a wee bit, bemusing, to say the least. But I think, a GAA player, especially hurlers, because when they take off their helmets, they're not recognisable figures, and they have to be given and afforded the opportunity to go and speak to the press to get their name and brand out there as much as possible. And essentially, I don't think it's going to do any harm. They're well coached on what to say and what not to say, so they're not going to say anything out of turn anyway.
Well, that's the thing, and this isn't a hurling issue, this is a GAA issue, this is a football issue too, because media only get to talk to players now at these sponsored events. We can get lucky sometimes with some of the weaker counties, or if one or two of the stronger counties might talk to you after a championship game, it's rare enough. But when county managers, and this is not a hurling thing, this is when county managers are now stopping their players speaking at the launch of some product. How is the whole thing supposed to work?
The thing is, those two guys, along with Neil McManus from Antrim, they're supposed to have designed this hurl. They are directly involved in the making of this. And they're the ones who give their expertise to say this is why it could be better and this is why it's not too far from what the norm is, the ash hurl. So if anyone could ever talk about it, it's those guys, because they're the ones who were really important to actually making the thing.
I'd say they were allowed to talk about the hurl. They're allowed to talk about the hurl, but sure, there's no sports journalist wants to write a piece about the hurl. These media events, there's a trade-off, obviously, between you give us something and at we'll the end we'll give the product, we'll put a picture up there, and that's the way to work.
Exactly.
It's a trade-off. But if they're only coming here to talk about the new composite hurl, you're not going to put a piece on the side about that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You might do something because it's new, but you're not going to promote it again the next day if they're not going to give you, if they're not going to play the game with you. But now county managers are not, Tipperary, for example, they're playing Offaly. What can be said before an Offaly game to fire Offaly off enough to beat Tipperary? They're minus, or they're plus 18.
Yeah, if I was one of those hurlers, I'd be annoyed, because it was an opportunity for me per se, to go and promote a product that I've designed and to help raise awareness of it. And yes, while they're allowed to speak about it, there's no way that you're going to get away with just speaking about the hurl and not being allowed to speak about games, upcoming games. And the season ahead. So certainly, those players, you'd wonder what's going on in their head. Are they annoyed about that their managers aren't letting them speak?
They'd have to be.
They've got to be,
And you'd have to nearly think they would go to the GPA and go, tip the GPA off, this is what's happening. And their union say, sorry, I don't think the GPA want to get involved in how teams are run. But surely it's got to the point now where a manager is preventing a player from promoting his business at a launch of his, like, this is his potentially exactly, his livelihood. Yeah. That's gone too far. That has gone too far now, as far as I'm concerned.
I believe that's gone too far when they're stopping them from promoting business opportunities. Absolutely, yeah. It's gone too far.
And even, Stevie, from the GAA point of view, you hear about them saying, we don't want to move the... Brendan O'Brien from the Examiner made a good point of this yesterday. We don't want to move the All-Irelands from September to August because we're losing ground on our competitors. And here's a brilliant opportunity for two of the big hurlers to have big serious focus on them in the national press and kick rugby and soccer off it for a day or two and have people reading about hurling, and they're not doing it. So the GAA need to take a stand on this type of stuff as well.
Yeah, our games are being less and less publicised and put out in the public forum, you know, with press releases and opportunities like this for players to go and actually express what they're feeling and thinking, you know. And back in the day there, you know, when I was playing with Armagh, Joe Kiernan would pick 2-3 players to go and speak to the media, and that's fine, you don't mind that there, but it seems to be a total ban now at the minute. I don't think that's fair enough on teams, fair enough on players, and fair enough on players particularly when they're going to promote a business opportunity that is their future essentially.
It's treating players like morons and idiots, that you can't trust a grown man to be able to go and talk a little bit about the team and in an honest way, but not giving trade secrets away. Like, I mean, give them a break. Yeah. They're not stupid. They're not imbeciles.
I remember going to a soccer event. I think Jason McAteer was up, and it was around the time one of the Hillsborough inquiries had sort of been revealed or whatever. And we were told, don't ask Jason McAteer about this. Don't ask him about it. And Jason showed up, and someone, of course, asked him about it and said, we were told not to ask you about it. And he's like, yeah, I haven't read too much about it, but the Sun are absolute twats for what they did at Manchester Airport today, and you can quote me on that. And he spent the next 10 minutes talking about it, and it was great stuff. Like, and it's stuff that people want to read about. We didn't want to hear about what Jason McAteer thought of the 2002 World Cup, you know, 16 years on or 15 years on. So, like, is
not 100% sure of your point here.
No, I'm going to say, is this, like, it was relevant, is my point. Like, is this it now? Are these lads not allowed to talk until September? Like, it's March now. Are they just gone? They're not allowed to talk about anything
else?
It
looks like that, yeah. It looks like that they're just 100% banned. Well, anyway, listen, we'll leave it there anyways, because we have to point this out, and I think it's gone too far. Dublin won the under-21 last night, lads. They hammered Offaly 2-14 to 8 points. That's their fourth under-21 in a row.
Yeah.
To add to their potential 3 in a row, 4 All-Irelands. They're on 2 in All-Irelands. They have 4 National Leagues. They have whatever Leinster's, this could be whatever, is it 15 of the last 16, something on those lines, that it's a complete domination. And the idea that a lot of people peddle out is that the Leinster Championship, it's cyclical and this always happened down through the years and it'll turn around. And it's like, what a load of absolute codswallop that it's cyclical. It's Dublin have their house in order. They're churning out great players. They've got great coaching set up. They've got the natural advantage of population. This ain't turning around anytime soon, lads. The only hope in Leinster we have is Kildare, who've won 3 of the last 4 minors, and they've obviously put in a big effort at underage. And when you look at this, lads, they talk about this being cyclical and this all turning around. Like, Alan Brogan's gone, you know, you've Kieran Kilkenny coming in to replace him. You'll have Dear McConnelly gone, you've Con O'Callaghan, you've Cormac Costello, you have Conor McHugh, like Niall Scully, when Paul Flynn retires. Don't be telling me this is cyclical and it's a special bunch of players, because in 7 or 8 years' time, when Connolly, Flynn, Brogan and all these lads are gone, you'll still have a forward line maybe of Niall Scully, Kieran Kilkenny, Mannion, Costello, McHugh, Con O'Callaghan. Do you know, and Paddy Andrews, who's 27, could still be hanging around there for a bit of experience. Lads, this ain't stopping, you know. Yeah, and
but it goes back to the point that it certainly isn't Dublin's fault, you know.
No, see, no one's blaming Dublin. They always take it this way.
Yeah, 10, 15 years ago, Dublin put in the, you know, the essential groundwork in terms of, you know, planning for the future, and other counties were left behind because Dublin seen a vision. They had a vision and they went and stuck by it, and they implemented a coaching strategy. They put coaches in around all of the schools, and
now they did get funding from the GAA to be to help them to do that.
Absolutely, and probably rightly so as well. But, you know, they are certainly getting the rewards of all of that now with their domination. But at that stage, 10, 15 years ago, they were still dominating Leinster, so it's certainly not cyclical. You know?
Yeah, no, 10, 15 years ago, they weren't actually. When they won the All-Ireland in 1995, they went through a drought and they didn't win it again until 2002 when you beat them.
Well, from 2002 on.
No, but then in 2003 we beat them, then Westmeath beat them, then Pillar Caffrey turned them around and they dominated from 2005 onwards. They've dominated Leinster. So that's a long time. That's like, you know, 13 seasons that they're dominating Leinster. So the idea that this is cyclical, 13 seasons isn't one team. It's, you know, a few different teams. And we're after naming out another team that's going to come along. And you've got Fenton in midfield. You know, you could go through the whole thing that they're going nowhere. That domination isn't stopping anytime soon. And it's just depressing from a Leinster point of view, not from a Dublin point of view, but I actually think it does Dublin no good whatsoever either, having a really weak province. Yeah. And we had Kevin Feely recently. It completely distorts the Leinster Championship, because I strongly believe the Meads, the Kildares, Meath and Kildare especially, could put it up to, you know, potentially Monaghan or Donegal or these teams. Might not beat them, but put it up to them. But the fact that Dublin are hammering them on a regular basis, the optics of it are that these teams aren't that good.
Yeah.
But they are good teams. Like, they're solid Division 2 teams. Yeah. They could get promoted. But it doesn't look like they're any good.
And as you said there, they both could be Division 1 teams by Sunday. Like, and I suppose the question is for Dublin now, like, these lads you mentioned are all good players coming through, but are they going to be some of the best players in the country? Like, the boys you mentioned are the best players in the country at the minute, your Connollys and your Brogans, and then the fence is the best around. So are the lads coming through? Dublin will always have good players, they'll always compete, especially at Leinster level, but are they going to take up the mantle of being household names and everyone knows them for 10 years?
Yeah,
that's going to be the big question.
Well, it will, yeah. I suppose it's replacing them, but, like, I mean, that forward line that we just called out, Kieran Kilkenny, will only get better. You know, he could become the talisman then, while,
yes,
you know,
he keeps hand passing and
well, yeah, he needs to develop his game
a little bit. I'm surprised you haven't mentioned that yet.
Don't get me started on that. Like, Kieran Kilkenny has the potential to be a Dear McConnelly if he just played.
I would absolutely love if Kieran Kilkenny played for Armagh, and I would let him hand pass all day long, no problem at all.
Don't get me started here now. Matty Donnelly, lads, we talked about him on Monday's show. We said he could be in trouble, and he is in trouble. He's after getting a one match ban for doing the old Armagh trick here of grabbing you by the scruff of the jersey, pretending they're holding you, but then just jabbing you into the jaw.
What do you mean the Armagh trick? Who did you get that from?
Ye brought all these bully boy tactics into the GAA. Been around
absolutely
house,
not.
Absolutely so. Well, I'll tell you what you brought
certainly
in.
Certainly didn't get caught.
I'll tell you what you brought in. You brought in the old, oh, he'll fall on the ground and I'll just happen to fall close to him, but I'd fall on top of him.
What was happening there was we were targeting you. It was none of your teammates, it was just you.
And body checks. You definitely brought the body check.
No, we were just physically that big. We were difficult to go past.
Another one, lads, is Cormac Riley. He's been he has been appointed to referee Mayo and Donegal at the weekend, and it's a very important game up in Mayo in Castlebar. And Mayo people are up in arms, and maybe rightly so. I don't think it's fair on Cormac Riley, and I don't think it's fair on the game. Cormac Riley obviously refereed the All-Ireland replay down in Limerick, which was very controversial. We had this big heavy man out of the stand
there'd
coming
be a
on to get him.
Will he be?
Was he banned from Mayo GAA in general, or was it just the Gaelic grounds? Because can he get into Castlebar now?
Yeah, I heard stories. He was at the under 21 final as well.
Right, he could be waiting outside the ground.
How are they going to stop him? Are they going to have a photograph? This guy is not allowed into these grounds.
Well, no, you need to talk to his daughter. She's the only one that's able to control this man when he loses the rage. That was terrible pictures that day, but it was brilliant at the same time. But Cormac Riley, obviously, he didn't give Shane Enright a black card that day, which was one of the most blatant black cards you'd ever see. There was a few soft frees and Donaghy, two penalties for Kerry. Kerry will probably have some arguments themselves about decisions they got or they didn't get. But all in all, Mayo fans are more outraged by it. But, like, Cormac Riley has been put in a pretty difficult position as well here. I wouldn't think he wants to go up there.
Yeah, he probably doesn't want to go up there after past experiences. But at the end of the day, you know, he's still an inter-county referee and he can't determine what matches he's going to be overseeing. So, you know, it is a very important game this weekend for both counties. So it'll be interesting to see how he handles it early on. You know, for a referee, it's very important, you know, if they have a bad experience with a particular county, it's very important that the first 5 minutes, that they lay a marker down and they stick by it for the duration of that game. And it'll be interesting to see how Cormac copes with the pressure that's put upon them by the Mayo fans, because you know they will get aggressive if a few decisions go against them and they feel aggrieved by them.
Yeah, referees laying down markers as well. Do referees have these team talks? Let's lay down a marker early with these lads now.
Yeah, but I think it's important that a referee goes into a game, you know,
all guns blazing.
I know, all guns blazing.
I'm going to have
leave no stone unturned.
You know, if he was refereeing Leash against Armagh, there'd be 10 black yards according to Woolley here. You know,
I'd love to hear a referee's team talk, because they have a team. They bring a team with them every day.
Yeah,
you know,
warm up.
Do they pray or what do they do?
They say is, what do you want on your steak sandwich afterwards?
I feel for Donegal in this scenario, because I don't think there's any way that Cormac Riley's going to go to Mayo and not arse like them a little bit. Like, you know, he's going to want to make friends and say, listen, sorry, like, that's all behind us now. I didn't mean to screw you over. I think that Donegal are going to get their raw deal here. If I was him anyway, I'd be looking to mend some bridges in Castlemore.
But you see, that's it. That's the double bluff then. Do I do that, or is that too obvious? Or then will I go back on Mayo? Like I say, there's a psychology there that probably doesn't need to be done. Just leave Cormac Riley
at the end
off.
Of the day, you know, his job is quite simple. You go in and do it fair. You know, you don't side with one team over the other. You go in and do it fair. And
if only the world worked like that.
I know that.
Yeah. But that's the way it works.
You'd love to know what's going on in a referee's mind sometimes, you know, for some of the decisions that they do give. But, you know, ultimately, you've got to go in and do it the best as you possibly can in the first for both teams.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. But, like, you know the freeze they're going to give. It must be human nature, because they all do it. When a team's coming back and they've got a bit of a momentum, the other team will be caught for over-carrying. You know what I mean? We know these 50-50 ones. You always know.
The ref gets caught up in the
emotion. Yeah, you get caught up in emotion. And maybe that's a human level. Yeah. Like we've now. I'd love to referee, actually, just to feel what it's like that... When a team, and you're on the pitch,
you got enough abuse as a player, now you want to be referee.
But you're on the pitch, right? And you're right down beside these players, and they've put a huge effort into coming back. I'd say it's difficult to separate yourself from the emotion of this and go, you know, and give a free against this momentum when it might be the right thing to do. But like,
sometimes you wonder, you know, when there's a decision in the penalty box and it's not given, but then maybe 20 yards further out the field, the exact same decision or even the lesser decision is given as a free. So how can the first one not be a penalty but the second one's a free, you know?
Yeah.
So you wonder, you know, what's their thinking behind that. But listen, we spoke about it. It's a tough job.
Tough
it's
job.
A difficult job.
It's
and
a tough
that's
job.
Why there should be two referees.
Yeah, no, well, I'm disagreeing on that.
I don't want to keep going on about referees, but my pet peeve with referees is when they feel like it's their job to even up the game. When one team's getting way ahead of the other and then they start giving soft freeze, and before you know it there's a goal and 2 points in, and the whole thing's back level because the referees decided to change how he was doing it.
I've had referees especially in club football, one in particular who used to, like, I could be getting fouled and I say, look, I'm getting fouled here. He says, well, you should have given it off earlier. That's none of your business to tell me whether I should have, like, this is, he wasn't giving me the foul because he thought I should have passed that off earlier. Just bizarre. So then you start getting all flustered and giving out to him and it's just a mess.
Another expert.
Yeah, exactly. But Conan, I'm going over to you here now because we're going to obviously preview the last round of the league, and there's loads of stuff that people listening here might need to watch out for. So we're going to discount Division 4 anyways because we know what's happening in that division. Westmead and Wexford are promoted. No one can get relegated. Beautiful thing there, that is, really. So Division 4, if you're a neutral at the weekend, you don't really have to worry too much about Division 4. Now, we'll start at Division 1 because there's plenty of stuff to look out for in Division 1. It looks like Dublin are in the driving seat. They're definitely in the league final, right?
They're not definitely, no.
Right, okay. No. If Donegal, if they're beaten by Monaghan and Donegal beat Mayo, Dublin won't be in the final. It will be actually Donegal and Monaghan then.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different things. Roscommon are relegated. There's a little bit of, you know, suspense surrounding who could get relegated, because if Cavan beat Roscommon, which could well happen, and Mayo lose to Donegal, Mayo are going down on the head-to-head, because first we're going head-to-head. If the head-to-head is a draw, then it's going to score difference. So because Cavan beat Mayo, if Mayo lose to Donegal and Cavan beat Roscommon, we'll see Mayo and Roscommon going down.
Yeah, the thing there is it's only head-to-head if two teams are level on points. So for that to happen, Cavan need Kerry to get a point against their own, because if all three of them are level on 6 points, it comes to score difference. And Cavan
right.
are bottom. So they need a result in Kerry and a result from Donegal.
Right,
as well.
So there's another one to throw into the
Kerry,
mix.
So Kerry also have to win because Mayo beat Kerry and that'll leave them all on 6 points.
No, but if Cavan beat Roscommon, there'd be three teams on six, and when there's three teams on the same points, head-to-head goes out the window. It's straight scoring difference, yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, so that's the thing that needs to be pointed out there. So there's like every team except for Roscommon in Division 1 has something to play for. Isn't that great on the last day of the season?
Six of them could make the final.
Six could make the final,
two
right?
Two of those could be relegated as well.
Yeah.
So by the end of Sunday, two of them could either be in, or one of them could be in Division 2, or they could be in a Division 1 final.
Right.
That's what's on the line.
It's very interesting for an eight team group to be that close. Division 2 then, we have Kildare, who are definitely promoted.
Mm-hmm.
And they're definitely in the final as well. 100% in the final. They can be joined in the final by Galway or Meath.
Yep.
Right, there's no question about that there. Relegation, we're looking at any team between Kerry down, Fermanagh, Clare, and Cork are thrown in the mix, Colin?
Yeah, there's five teams, yeah. Cork,
five
Clare,
teams
Fermanagh,
could potentially
down
go down.
Yeah. And again, it's sort of, it comes down to the head-to-head stuff. The Clare are on 5 points, but if Down level with them and another couple of results go against Clare, then Clare could end up dropping down because they lost to Down in their head-to-head match. So
right, yeah,
it all depends on how all the other games go. I'm just looking at it from Derry's point of view, whereas if Cork beat Down and Derry beat Fermanagh, then Derry are safe. That's taken care of and there's no head-to-head or whatever. But
Cork beat Down and Derry beat Fermanagh, and Derry have a decent say in staying up then, you know, because you'd imagine Cork will beat Down. That's in Cork, right?
Yeah. Derry's biggest problem there is that they have to win a game.
Yeah. but what is
winning games.
What will be motivating Derry this week will be the fact that, you know, if we go and beat Fermanagh, you know, we are going to be safe, because they would expect Cork are going to beat Down. So, you know, they'll be thinking, you know, we get the result, we are safe.
Yeah, the only thing is that Cork don't really have anything to play for. They're in.
Well,
them.
They do. They can go down, right? If Cork lose, right, and then you look at Fermanagh winning, Clare winning. Oh no, Down have to. Or Down would be Cork, so that would bring them up over them on the head-to-head. If Clare and Fermanagh win, Cork go down. So there is a plausible chance
and
of them going down,
here,
right?
It's the last game of the season in terms of the league, so it's an opportunity, you know, to go out and for players to go out and perform and show their manager that they should be in the starting team for the championship. So, you know, I believe that they certainly have something to play for.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's very interesting. So every team in Division 2 outside of Kildare have a massive game to play for as well. So that's Division 1 and Division 2, incredibly exciting on the last day of the season. And like, I mean, you look at the Hurling League and they made it into six teams, and four of them going to quarterfinals, which is a bit of a farce in itself. Yeah. But that's to give every team something to play for on the last day. Here's teams with eight in them.
Yeah.
And we can only count Roscommon and Kildare for different reasons, one relegated, one promoted. So there's 14 teams with something to play for in the top two divisions. And Division 3, we're going to get to that now, is the very bloody same.
The bottom four are all playing each other this weekend. You can't get better than that.
You couldn't have wrote that script.
Exactly,
so in Division 3, it's very exciting too. Loud are promoted, so they're done. They actually play Sligo at home, and actually Loud are way outsiders. Sligo are favourites to win that, so the bookies aren't stupid. They reckon Loud might, you know, give a few lads a chance because they've played a strong team right throughout the league. So we're looking at Armagh and Tipperary are playing off, and they're playing each other. Huge game. We're going to take a look at that in a little while. One of the two of them is going to join Loud in the final and be promoted. And then we have the same situation as Division 2. We have five teams, Sligo on five, and the bottom four teams on 4 points.
Yep.
So any of those five can go down. So there's a whole load of permutations that can go on here. We won't bore people with them, but, you know, Laois play Offaly, and that's a local derby already, and the losers of that will go down. And Offaly play Antrim, or Longford play Antrim, and the losers of that will pretty much go down. So there's a lot of draws, hypothetical scenarios that could happen. But
the only thing with Sligo is that because if the bottom four teams below them are playing each other, it's very unlikely that they'll go down. They'll probably beat Louth anyway, but they have all the teams have to draw below them, and they have to lose by 15 points or something to go down. So
okay,
they're safe.
Yeah,
well, it'd be interesting there if the teams below them did draw, and Sligo got beat, five teams on 5 points. you know, and only two.
But there are five teams at 5 points, yeah. Then score difference comes in, and Sligo are minus 5, and you have Offaly are minus 27, and Antrim and Laois in around minus 19 here, according to Wikipedia. But you reckon Laois are minus 18 here?
I went by the GA website.
Yeah, so I think Sligo, they're pretty sure Sligo are safe then. So, so that's different in Division 2, as in the bottom four. Any of the bottom four can go down.
It's basically, and if you win one of your games in that bottom four, you're safe. If you lose, you're down. That's the way it is. If you draw, it's more complicated.
That's pretty much it. Right, well listen, that's enough for now. We will come back and we're going to take a look at Lough. We're going to take a look at Kildare, Galway and Tipperary, Armagh.
Dearie, great to finally get to interview you.
Really, yeah. Why is it great?
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile of...
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me? I know we spoke about the defensive side of things. If you're coming in and you want to be, if you want to be the Woolly Parkinson and just play for myself, and an inter-county corner forward isn't just patching the side either. Unfortunately for you, Woolly, it won't last forever. You can ask ex-players that. You can ask you know that yourself, Woolly.
Yeah, mine never started at all.
Yeah, well, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, lads, Galway and Kildare is the big one, and that's part of a really, really tasty doubleheader in Salt Hill. You've got Galway and Kildare in the football, and you've got Galway and Waterford in the hurling. So, you know, if anybody's in and around Galway on Sunday, that's a brilliant game to go, brilliant doubleheader to go to, two really close games. Galway are favourites for this one, and we mentioned this earlier on in one of the earlier podcasts, lads. Galway looked like a team that, to me, and I'm including Kildare in this, probably the best... Kildare might need another couple of years in their progression, but Galway looked the best equipped to go up to Division 1 and not come straight back down.
Yeah, possibly so. They have good pedigree, they've got fantastic footballers, and you know, having heard some feedback on their match last week against Down, they certainly are well coached and well drilled, you know, from kickouts all the way up the pitch. You know, each and every player knows exactly what they're doing and where to be for certain set plays, etc. So, you know, they have an opportunity to go up and to compete at the highest level again, you know, consistently for the next couple of years. With the squad that they have.
They obviously went down badly to Tipperary last year in the All-Ireland quarter-final, and their full-back line got cleaned out of it. Now, they've made some changes to their full-back line. I mean, last year they had Kyne, Wynn and Kerrin, and they had Power in goals. So only Kyne has kind of kept his position this year, and he's been playing in the corner. So they've been bringing in Luke Burke and bringing in David Walsh into the full back line. So they've tried to make some changes there. They brought in Sweeney as well. So it's not the same full back line. The half back line is very interesting. You're always looking for progression. We obviously mentioned in one of the earlier shows they brought in Johnny Heaney into wing back, who's a wing forward last year. So when Galway are dropping men back in this system that they're playing, Johnny Heaney's able to break forward, and the half back line have license. But really interestingly, against Down the last day, they played Martin Farraher, who's a noted forward for Corrifin at centre half back. So they've got two forwards in their half back line. So it's very interesting, this dynamic. And I've banged on the show, and I said it's a weakness of Kerry that they don't have enough danger from their half back line, because when you're playing that system where lads drop back, these fellas are not getting picked up, and they can break an awful lot easier than other fellas, and that scoring power from your half back line is so important. So Galway maybe are identifying this.
Well, the top teams have fantastic attacking half back lines. You look at Donegal, you look at Tyrone, Mayo, they all have players, Lee Keegan, Ryan McHugh, players that burst through from the half back line and are comfortable in front of goals. And maybe that's something that Kevin Walsh is looking at in the Galway half back line, that when the boys do push through, that, you know, we all know the mindset of Galway footballers is very attack minded anyway. So when they're bursting through and creating opportunities for themselves, that they have players maybe coming off the shoulder from the half back line, having a bit of space for themselves and being able to kick points and scores and to double up for Galway.
You look at Tiernan McCann there as well. I mean, he was playing wing forward, and now he's one of the best halfbacks in the country, and it looks like he's never tired, and he's aggressive, and he's
very similar positions now, aren't they?
Yeah, you know? And he's just coming. Like, it's actually sometimes it suits players better because they're facing the goals rather than having their back to goals, so they can come onto the ball all the time and get off the shoulder. And he's like, when he's getting forward, I know we're talking about Galway, but when he gets any sight, it's just so comfortable popping the ball over. And as you said, like, it's better when you have
proper attacking players that can come forward like that.
Yeah, and they have, like, I mean, when you look at through their team, like, they have a solid midfield now. I know their midfield didn't go well last year against Tipperary, but Conroy and Fiontano Corrin, like, they've got Paul Conroy can score really, really accurate. Corrin is a big man, can dominate in the air. They've Tom Flynn in the half forward line, and you look at their bench that came on the last day, lads. Like, and this is already with a forward line of Flynn, Shane Walsh, who's on fire, Brannigan, who's getting goals, Gary Sice, McHugh, and Sean Armstrong. They brought on Liam Silk, who's on the team last year, Michal Lundy, Danny Cummins, and Garrett Bradshaw.
Yeah,
like, I mean, this is a good quality on top of what's already a really good quality team. And you mentioned O'Donnell, Gary O'Donnell there. He scored something like 6 points from play from the half back line. So it's obvious, just looking from their play, that they're launching their attacks from their half back line. They have scoring forwards. Yeah. They even, like, if you look at their half forward line, they have Gary Sice, who will, and Tom Flynn, who will drop back and help out their defence. Fiontana Corrin and Paul Conroy can do the same. And I'm looking at this Galway team, and I'm honestly, like, I really think they're a team that's on the up and going really well.
There's no doubt you really get excited about this Galway team.
I do.
You've made your intentions clear for the last couple of weeks. But, you know, in years gone by, the fastest players are always probably picked in the corner forward position so that they can win the ball and take a man on. But it seems to be now managers are adapting this mindset that the fastest players come from deeper and come onto the ball more, facing the ball, as Colin said. So, you know, Galway definitely, you know, down through the years have always been, when on fire, difficult to stop because they just throw caution to the wind. They go at teams and they go at them with pace and with flair, and they play a good brand of football, so they do. And they've always had quality forwards, and it seems now that these players are starting to adapt into Kevin Walsh's system. They're starting to play the way Galway teams have played in years gone by, and they're starting to get results and performances, and there's certainly a good buy-in from all the players now, and they're enjoying themselves and expressing themselves. And once you're doing that as a player, you know, you get more out of yourself, and Galway are certainly proving that they should be in the top division of Gaelic football at the minute.
Yeah, Damien Comer, of course, has to be mentioned. He was on the show here, and he was great on the show, and he's a brilliant, brilliant player, and he got injured actually the night after he did the interview on the show, so we haven't seen him since. But he's another player that's been missing, even though they're picking up these good results. And he talked on the show that day about the one thing that Galway are focusing on is consistency. And I heard Kevin Walsh talk about it after the Down game. He says, we're trying for this consistency, consistency, consistency. He said, we've only lost one game in the league, and that was by a point against Meath. And I think they were unlucky to lose that game. Mm-hmm. They've drawn with Cork and they've won the rest of them. So that's that level of consistency. Because, like, I mean, I know it's maybe an old-fashioned way of looking at Galway, but always seems, well, in the last 5-6 years there's been good result, bad result, good result, bad result, can't get out of Division 2, don't trust Galway. Like, you never say Galway will win that one. You never really think that, but that's what they're trying to change, and they're conscious of it, and like, they seem to be doing that.
When Kevin Walsh mentions consistency, you know, he's not talking about performances, he's talking about results, and that's what they're getting at the minute. And, you know, there's nothing better for a team than gaining results and getting wins in tight battles as well. And, you know, they're starting to get over the line in some tight games as well. It'll be interesting this weekend against Kildare, the team who are above them in the league, how to perform. Will Kildare go out with a weakened team? I can't see it happening, but, you know, it'll be interesting to see how Galway perform against them. But I think, you know, it's going to be a fantastic game and a great opportunity for Kevin Walsh to really see where this Galway team are at the minute.
It'll be a great game. And, like, I mean, on that consistency thing, this, every team needs motivation, right? Mm. And they talk about pinning things in the dressing room wall and all this. I don't agree with that. But this consistency thing, this is something you can hammer away at the players. Like, this is what the way you're being perceived, you know, and they can use that. And it's not really an external thing, like, you have to use, he said it from that county, you know, like that stuff. Yeah. But that's something that is, you know, within the county. And this is something that you can, I'd say Kevin Walsh, I'd say that's their buzzword, you know, these buzzwords. Yeah. And consistency is being hammered home at them all the time. To get into their heads, even before a league game against Down, who are not going well, lads, don't take this for granted. Consistency, that's our motivation, is to get Galway to this level that the good teams are at, that they're always performing well.
The job that Kevin Walsh is doing as well, it sort of contradicts what Keane was saying on Monday, when he was saying about there is no real plan. Like, you know, every season you take it as it comes and it's different every season.
Yeah, I didn't really agree with that point from Keane.
I don't know what Stevie thinks. Like, yeah, Keane's great, like, you know. But, like, yeah, he was basically saying that there's no correlation. Every season you just come in and it's a different season again. You have different players, and he doesn't buy any 3-year plans and that. But what
Walsh is doing there is clear that they're making constant progress every year, and now they're going to be in Division 1, I think, at the end of this weekend.
Well, I think long-term planning is the way forward for any manager, and manager has to be given an opportunity, you know. And my own county, Kieran McGinney, the first two seasons didn't go according to plan, but maybe, you know, he was looking at the bigger picture, the longer plan. He was offered a 5-year plan time frame at the start. He's the third year into that now, and Armagh are starting to put performances together and results together. And, you know, sometimes there's high expectations and demands set on managers, and they're not able to express themselves freely as well as players. So, you know, maybe Kevin Walsh is looking at it in the right manner, and Kieran McGinney alike as well.
Yeah, talking about Walsh's, Shane Walsh is in great scoring form throughout the league. Like, I mean, it's hard to completely judge these teams when you haven't seen them in the flesh, but he's scoring heavily. And he's a player that's gone through a couple of seasons not in the best of form, and you wonder whether kind of the defensive system suits him that much. You don't want to see him doing that much work. He's got such class that he needs to discover a position for himself within this new system. You know, he needs to figure it out. Where do I fit into this? I'm a traditional, my best position is a traditional centre half forward, but I don't really want to go back there. You know, I'm not saying he doesn't want to go back there, but it affects his game maybe going back there. So it's finding, maybe staying as that link man on the half forward line is perfect for him, and where he can affect the scoreboard, which is so important for him, and use his speed, because I mean, like, he's so dangerous.
Yeah, when he wins a ball, he's very dangerous pushing forward. But I think it's important for a team and for a manager to identify, you know, right, if we have wing half forwards dropping back, playing deep, half backs coming under, we always need to have a presence in that half forward line, and Shane Walsh is a massive presence for Galway.
Yeah, we made that point on Monday. We don't want to get into Tyrone, because I think we talk about Tyrone on the show a lot. That's one thing that they're missing, is they never have that presence on the half forward line. They bring too many men back, and they're so reliant on the hand passing game working. There's never an option up front to move that ball a little bit quicker and get up the field a little bit faster. You know, it always has to go through the hands, and that's a bloody grueling, difficult game to enforce every single day. It does work for them when they get a counter attack, but when they don't get a counter attack, maybe it doesn't. But Kildare really interesting as well. And I mentioned those three minor Leinsters. They're on the up. There's absolutely no doubt about that. They're on the up. They have an average age of 23. They're starting 15. They have only three players over the age of 25. If ever a team is going to break Dublin's dominance in Leinster, we all have to hope Kildare can do it. Like, and that's again without the Dublin fans going mad. As a neutral, you want to see a bit of competition, but they're well placed potentially to do it. And they've a really good team, lads. They've a really good team. They've played a settled team. We had Kevin Feely on the show there recently, and it was interesting. He said last year's championship was disappointing. They went down very badly to Westmeath. They played a defensive style of play. They're not a defensive team. They tried it out against Westmeath with Dublin on their horizons. You know, maybe looking too far ahead, and Westmeath caught them, you know. So I don't think they'll make that same mistake again, you know, this kind of long term plan. It just shows how much Dublin spook teams that they would do that. And maybe I'm not criticising Keane O'Neill for doing that, like, you know, if you want to practice it. I would say maybe practice it against your B team in training rather than a championship game. But, you know, that's the way it worked. But they're racking up the scores, lads. They're scoring loads of goals. They're scoring loads of points. They've the best offence in the league. They've the best defence in the league.
Yeah.
They have a team, you know, really settled team. They're playing Daniel Flynn at full forward, who's like a really big man, a natural midfielder, wing forward. He's at full forward now. Ben McCormack's come in. He scored really heavily in his first two games. They've a really solid, exciting team. They've Fergal Conway, who's an ex-centre half-back, playing at wing forward. They have Paul Cribben, who can play wing back, midfield, wing forward, at wing forward. So they're your two workers straight away. Yeah. They have Niall Kelly, who won't be going back working, who's a playmaker centre forward, proper old school. Then you have Daniel Flynn, who's a presence at full forward, and Ben McCormack and these fellas, Niall Flynn, who are getting your scores. So suddenly, a brilliantly settled midfield in Kevin Feely and Tommy Mulick, big fetchers, footballers. You know, like, I mean, Kildare are a team that would excite you when you go through that team as well.
Are they going to win an All-Ireland in the next
year? No, I'm not making that call. But they are best placed to potentially challenge
Dublin. Kieran O'Neill is certainly getting a lot out of them at the minute. And the one trap that Kildare can fall into in the next few seasons is believing that the success at minor level will automatically guarantee them success at senior level. And we all know the step up is absolutely massive from minor to senior football in, at inter-county level. So these players have to come in with a renewed attitude, you know, an attitude that, you know, we're starting at the very start again here, that we have to put in, you know, harder work than what the Dublin players are putting in. We have to train just as hard as them. We have to work on our ball skills just as hard as them. And when it comes to training sessions, you know, everything that we do is exactly the way we want it to be successful. And, you know, if they fall into that trap believing that they're going to have achieved success, it's not going to happen. But they have to really put in the groundwork when they come up, when those quality players come through the senior ranks as well. But certainly Kieran O'Neill is getting a lot out of his players at the minute, and they're going in the right direction.
I don't think they've any problem believing they're going to win when Dublin are hovering around Leinster, you know, that kind of way. It's not going to get into their heads to be fairly humble about the fact that they might.
Yeah, but we have seen, I will use one team in particular, it's a club team in Derry, Glen
Mahara.
They've absolutely dominated the Ulster scene at minor level over the last 5-6 years, and under 21s, they've won the under 21 Ulster club recently as well, but they haven't gone and competed at senior level just yet. So, you know, I'm sure that Glenn have a plan of attack, you know, when these guys ultimately do come through and become experienced senior players. But, you know, I'd be looking out for Glenn in the next couple of seasons. Will they make that breakthrough? And the same can be said for the likes of Kildare. You know, dominated underage football, but, you know, it's a different level moving up the senior grade. And,
yeah,
you know, it has to be properly planned and thought out if they're going to be successful.
Yeah, there's no doubt. We learned that way, the hard way, yeah, with Laois underage. It took maybe, when you come out of minor, it probably takes you 5 years before, well, especially when there's a big...
6 years to go and compete.
Especially,
yeah,
when there's six or seven of you coming, yeah, through. You know what I mean? It's just too much of a kind of group of youngsters to come through and make an impact at the same time.
I was always told that a healthy senior team anyway only needed four of the best players coming through from each age group, which always made me shit myself because never in the top
four. You're lucky to get four, probably, of, you know, they say two or three. Well, if you're getting two or three,
Cross
really
McGlenn were going really well, there was only one or two coming through, you know, and that's all it took for them. One or two really sparked something different in each and every team. Probably over the last couple of seasons they've had to take more young players through, but you know, when the McEntees were playing, Oisín McConville and I was playing, it was only one or two new players coming in each and every year, and they got success after success.
The problem with Kildare then is when there's been a bit of a vacuum for a few years, and you have that black hole then,
exactly,
that you can't fill with all these young lads. It's still going to take another 10 years nearly for those lads to get matured and be leaders and then have an infestation of all our young lads.
That's why they're going in the right direction, because this is a good team, right? Average age of 23, only three players over 25. So in 5 years' time, they're in their prime, a lot of them. And then you have these 2015 and 16 minors, you know, coming through into that. And then you're looking at Kildare potentially having the strength and the experience to be able to challenge Dublin. Now, not in the near future, but at the same time, they are looking like they're moving in the right direction, you know. And they're scoring goals as well. They've scored 11 goals. Galway have scored 12. That's, if we don't see goals this weekend, you know, you'd be very surprised, because they're two very attack-minded teams. And again, you know, trying to get that balance between, that's the challenge for every manager now these days, because every team's playing this same similar style of dropping men back behind the ball when you lose it.
Yeah.
But it's getting the scores on the other end. And like at a Division 2 level, Galway and Kildare seem to have got that balance really right.
Now I think the question is, how much do Kildare want to play Galway or Meath in the final? Like, it's basically, not that it's completely up to them, but if they want to play Galway, then they can just let Galway win, because Kildare are already through. You know, they have to beat Galway for Meath if they have any chance to go through. So it's going to be interesting. Like, will they just field a dummy team?
Yeah, you see, I was thinking about this. I don't think either of these two teams would field a dummy team, and I tell you why. They're building and they need a good test, and this is a test against the two best teams in the division, and they want to see, right, they're under this pressure of a home game, and Kildare will be thinking, under this pressure of having to go to Galway and win, the best team in the division, a Division 1 team, let's challenge ourselves against that. I cannot see either of these two teams not taking this almost like a championship game.
We did the same last week with the Banty.
We did. Walsh and O'Neill are no Banty.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's for sure. But I would expect, and I would think along the same lines yourself, that both teams will want a real stern test coming into the championship, and if they can get two of them in the next few weeks, even better. You know, so
yeah, it would be mismanagement really not to use this opportunity to see what your lads are really about, wouldn't it? Like, it would be
the last game of the last league game game of the season. You know, every single player wants to go and perform for the manager. They want to make a point, and they want to prove that they're ready for the championship team. And you know, the only way the manager's going to see that is by putting out his strongest team. And if he needs to make tweaks on that, there, so be it. But you know, he doesn't want to be maybe making 7 or 8 changes this week and then going into the championship and not knowing exactly where he is and where the team's at.
Yeah, listen, I'm actually completely after forgetting kind of that there is a league final again the next week. but anyways, even on that, lads, I don't. Meader aren't bankers to be clear away anyways. So like, I mean, this could end up. It doesn't matter what happens in that Kildare-Galway game, because Meath will have a lot to do. Clare going so well in Division 2 that you wouldn't be guaranteed that. Right, we've probably talked about that enough. The big one in Division 3, we're leaving Division 1 off for a while because we spoke about all the teams plenty. The big one obviously in Division 3 is Laois and Offaly. No, I'm only joking. It's our man Tipperary. That's the big one. And there's a lot of pressure on both teams, I think. I don't think it's that you could even point out who the most pressure is on, because both these teams really, it's an awful knockback, Stevie, for whoever doesn't get up here.
Well, I can only speak from an Armagh point of view, but it would be a serious setback, you know, for Armagh not to come out of Division 3, and for Tipperary as well. You would imagine a team that went and competed at the semi-final of the All-Ireland stage last year, that it would be a serious setback for them, you know, in their progression and moving forward. So, you know, both teams will be under pressure, but I hope and I expect that this match will be played at championship pace, because there's so much riding on it.
Definitely, and this is 100%. There's no league final the next week unless you win this one. It's not like, you know, Galway. It's, yeah, pretty much a semi-final. The one thing I was wondering about McGeaney is, how is he being perceived in Armagh? Like, I mean, is the public thinking this is going in the right direction, or are they thinking this hasn't had the impact we'd hoped?
You know, at the end of the day, you know, it doesn't make a difference what the public think. Armagh are starting to move in the right direction.
But what do they think?
Well, my opinion is, you know, I'm delighted to see that Kieran is now getting results, because he needed to be given time. You know, the expectations in Armagh from fans sometimes is too unrealistic. You know, Kieran came in to a very young team 2 years ago, and you know, they were expecting massive gains straight off, and that doesn't happen, and that's judged on the past.
But he was also coming into a team that hadn't almost beaten Donegal in a quarter final the year before.
Yeah, but you know, a lot of those key players, like Kevin Dess, hasn't played since that Durham match, and he was playing centre half forward, one of the main players. You know, if you lose your link player from that really good season, you know, you're going to have to find a good, you know, replacement for him. And Armagh haven't really found a replacement until this season for the likes of Kevin Dess. He is still limited chance of making championship football, but you know, he hasn't played in 3 seasons, so it's going to be difficult for him at this stage. But Kieran is still coming in, you know, he's got his own ideas. Paul Grimley was the manager back then. Kieran has his own ideas as a manager, and for Kieran to implement them and you know, win over his players, you know, it's going to take time. Yes, he has high expectations of players coming in, he sets high demands. But, you know, that's the way Kieran has always been, and he's going to make no apologies for that. But, you know, from a public point of view, absolutely, in his first 2 seasons, he was absolutely slated. And I think it was uncalled for, a lot of it, because, you know, we spoke about it. A manager has to be given an opportunity, has to be given a chance. This year, the tide seems to be turning for Armagh, and fans are starting to realise, okay, maybe, you know, this young team did need an opportunity to go and progress and learn from the manager and learn from the coaches. Kieran has also made a few backroom changes as well, and I think they have made a key difference in how Armagh are performing and how Armagh are going out. John Toll has been brought in. Paddy McKeever has also been brought in. So John Toll, he was a defensive midfielder for us, so straight away, you know, he's helping set up the defence and the midfield side of things, as where Paddy McKeever was a fantastic half forward, a player who always performed higher levels, you know, the bigger the game. So, you know, he's brought in his attacking wisdom to the setup as well, and there's no doubt
to share it around the coach.
You know, it seems to be shared around. So, you know, Kieran has made key changes to the backroom team, and maybe he's realised that there are a few opportunities to make changes there, so he's done that. And you know, having listened to Kieran last week in an interview before the Antrim game, you know, he realises, you know, that he's only one match away from a kick in the ass again, so he's not getting carried away with how Armagh are performing at the minute. Having been at that Antrim game last week, I'm absolutely delighted that they only scraped across the line, you know, because the last thing that we wanted from an Armagh point of view was the Armagh going and absolutely destroying Antrim like they've done the Louth the previous week and Offaly the week before that, and going into the final game of the season believing that they're way better than what they are. You know, they were firmly taken back down the ground, back down to earth last weekend against Antrim. Antrim played a very defensive game. Armagh scraped across the line, very, very lucky to win the game, and that's the type of preparation that they needed exactly going into this Tipperary match.
Yeah, is Kieran McKeever experiment at full force? Is this happening? This is happening, officially
I wrote a blog this week about the movement that he creates. I am excited about Kieran McKeever in there, believe it or not, because...
Really? Then does Stephen Campbell go to half forward line?
Stephen Campbell plays inside and drops deep. You know, he's playing a mixed role, so he is, as is Jamie Clark, but Kieran McKeever, you know, I never thought that I would see him playing from playing in the full forward line at intercounty level, but what he does, he's got vast experience, of course, but it's his movement is absolutely exceptional to watch, and he could teach many, you know, young forwards a lesson in terms of how to move.
Right.
You know, particularly in the last couple of games that I've seen him, so intelligent.
What's his move? Give us an explanation. Like, is he breaking to the wings and leaving space, or is he?
He
like
knows when to mix. He mixes it up. He thinks about his runs. You know, he sometimes he drags his man to the sideline. Sometimes he jinks. He checks. You know, too often in the modern game, you see too many forwards making straight line runs, and that's very easy to defend.
Yeah.
Not once in the couple of games that I seen Kieran McKeever making a run has he made any straight line runs. It's always jinking and turning and checking and making the run at the right time, knowing that when he goes, the ball's being delivered. And another key thing in this game is he wins the ball. He lays it off. If there's somebody coming off his shoulder, he's not unselfish. He lays it off, and he's got two goals and a few points in the last few games as well because of his work rate and his knowledge of knowing where to be at the right time. And he's a thinking footballer. And very, very uncommon in the modern day.
Yeah, and selfless too. You need someone selfless when you've got Jamie and Stefan in there who are scorers. You need a nice balance in there, because
absolutely,
you can't have three fellas all looking for scores. It just doesn't work.
Well,
you're not making
Armagh
runs.
Armagh at the minute have five or six fellas who are quality footballers in the forward line, but all scorers, a lot of them scorers. So put Kieran McKeever in the mix there, who adds something different to the team, and I tell you, there's a good blend, there's a good mix there.
Can he shift though? Like, what happens if a real tight marker comes on to him?
He can shift over 10-15 yards, absolutely. You know, there's nobody more explosive over 10-15 yards. Kieran is now 32-33, but the pace, you know when he reacts to something, he's out in front of his man.
Yeah, and the good thing about that is it gives his career an injection and a boost now. That's something completely new. It's like he's starting all over again, and instead of his career maybe fizzling out, having to mark really fast, good centre forwards, they're suddenly now... Remember, the Brian Corcoran is the great example
exactly,
in hurling. Like, he just completely transformed himself.
And there was another guy played for Meath in the half-back line.
Brendan Riley.
You know, and this is a point that I'd like to make, is that I think this is very intelligent management from Kieran McGeaney's point of view as well. You know, and it's something that a lot of the supporters probably won't recognise, but I think it's very smart management, man management, and managing a player who adds vast experience to the team but will offer something totally different to the team as well.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, definitely. Quickly on Tipperary, lads, because we're running out of time. You're looking through their team. They've added really nobody from last year, which is disappointing. You know, we all know about Stephen O'Brien. They have Paddy Codd, who came back this year, and he's been playing all their games at full back. But he's still depending on the same fellas, you know, Bill Maher, Kiley, Jimmy Feehan in the half back line. And then you have Josh Keane, Ken O'Halloran, Brian Fox, Connor Sweeney, Quinn Liven. You have Austin. It's all the same lads as last year that he's coming back with this year. So with their underage talent and stuff like that, I was hoping that they might come with something new. They've lost Atchison in midfield. They obviously don't have, I mentioned Stephen O'Brien already, that's maybe a first choice midfield gone. Like, I can't see Tipperary getting to the heights that they did last year.
Yeah, they had a good team last year though, and I know Atchison's a huge loss, but I wouldn't be so quick to change things, like, especially coming off the back of what they did. And I think the longer it went on last year, we realised, Jesus, this actually is just a good team. This isn't some sort of fairy tale story. Like, they actually have something about them. And
then again, I suppose Cork are going bad enough that, you know, it's not like I wouldn't be banking on Cork to beat them. I can't think of the draw in Munster. Niall, you might look that up there if you can see it. I'm not too sure, but, like, I mean, maybe you're right, Conan. Maybe they're on that trajectory where they need one more year with the same team before they need to start freshening up. You always like to see one or two more coming in, though.
Exactly. I wouldn't rule them out, though, because, you know, I have been speaking to Loud supporters this week, and what they said in the first 10-15 minutes of the match against Loud, they should have been 6, 7, 8 points up. They also missed a penalty in that game, you know. So, you know, that game, if that penalty had gone in, might have been so different for Tipperary, and it could have been a case that Loud were going to be playing this weekend in a very important match. But, you know, Tipperary, generally cause serious problems to Armagh. I don't know what it is. You always come across a county that, you know, it's always going to be a difficult match regardless, and you know that you're going to, if you get a result, you're going to be made work hard for it.
Would you have played them much?
Oh, in the league, absolutely, yeah. I would have played against Tipperary 5 or 6 times, and
right,
always tough games. So, you know, it's not a case of Armagh always playing at a higher level than Tipperary, because we've been down the lower leagues many times and we've been hovering in around Division 2 quite a while as well. And, you know, we've had many fantastic games at Tipperary, and, you know, they've got exciting forwards. If those boys get an opportunity, they will punish you, as, you know, we all seen last year against Galway in the quarter final. You know, they've got quality free takers in Sweeney and Quinlivan, and if them boys, you know, Armagh's Achilles heel last week in the game against Antrim was that they conceded too many frees, and CJ McGordy kicked them over time after time. So if Armagh concede the same volume of free kicks this weekend against Tipperary, Sweeney and Quinlivan will kick them points over, you know, time after time, and it'll give them a very good opportunity.
Yeah, interesting enough, we have Armagh scored 15.87 in their scores. Now that's distorted a little bit by getting 6 against Offaly. Tipperary have scored 9.88. So these are the two big scorers. So we talked about Kildare and Galway expecting a lot of scores. We're expecting a lot of scores in this one as well. So that's the reason we picked those two games to have a look at. But we may leave it there. Up next, we're going to do, you'll be glad to hear this, it's our last accumulator of the year.
Thanks be to God.
Somebody said it's as ugly as Marty Morrissey for both.
We probably, in fairness, he wouldn't know a penalty if it bit him in the arse. I mean,
what is the point of this? They swear allegiance to the cult of Cairn.
But I tell you what, you can forget about Sean Kavanagh as far as he's a man.
Is managing Mead at some stage in for the rest of your life a pebble in your shoe that you want to get out?
No, I think I've got over that.
Have you?
If I went to do that, sure, who'd keep manners on Joe Brawley on the Sunday game? And you couldn't expose the nation to him on his own, could you?
AIB, backing club and county.
Accumulators, lads, and I have mentioned this before, is if you look back through them all, I have been consistently getting 3 out of 4. I haven't been able to get the accumulator over the line. I think I need to learn a lot of lessons for next year's league, for people to actually listen to this slot. I actually think we could have one more accumulator, all 4 league finals. They're all played at the same weekend. So we have one more. This is not our last chance.
There is another competition on after the league, you know.
Yeah, but there's not. During the qualifiers, we could do an accumulator. But generally, it'll be more predictions in for the championship, because as we know, we only get one bloody game every Sunday, and that's kind of the way it works. You have to understand, lads, during the championship, we'll be doing an hour in one game. So just to let you know, that's the way it works. So, Conan, we'll start off with you here, who's basically been a nothing short of a disgrace, really, on this accumulators. You're not a betting man.
Well, you say that, but this one can get you 26 million quid if you put on 4 million quid. It's a 13-2 shot.
Alright, so you've really tried to redeem a 4 team accumulator, 13-2. Yeah. So these are bankers that you've tried to get at least one accumulator up. You've tried to do this before, you know, and it hasn't worked out.
I think this is fine. Like, yeah, so it's 3 away teams, though, is the problem, and Derry are in it. That's probably like fattening it out. But so I've got Dublin to beat Monaghan. I've got Meath to beat Clare. They need to win Division 2.
Yeah, see, I think that's a dodgy one. Go on.
Derry to beat Fermanagh, another team that needs to win, and they don't generally have too many problems with Fermanagh.
Yeah.
Apart from one Ulster semi-final after we beat Donegal. Anyway, and Armagh to beat Tipperary.
Armagh to beat Tipperary, yeah, that's 8-11. So that all comes out at 13-2.
Yeah.
So you've gone for what price are Dublin very strong favourites to beat?
They're 3-10 to beat Monaghan.
3-10, all right, that's decent price for Dublin there.
I actually think that's a decent accumulator myself now.
Right, okay, Stevie. Pressure. I'll give you mine here before we go to Stevie. Stevie's gone with 3 again this week, so he's really rattled. It's not he's trying everything and just nothing's working for him at all. So I'm going for Kerry at 8-13 to beat Tyrone. I'm going for Armagh at 8-11 to beat Tipperary. I'm going Laois at 4-6 to beat Offaly, and I'm throwing a rabbit in the hat. I'm going for Roscommon at 7-4 to beat Cavan. They're going to save face. They have a good record against Cavan, and I think they're going to beat them. And that all comes at 13-1. Now, I am a banker. I'd like to get odds on what to get 3 of those 4 up, because that's what's going to happen. If you're
You know what I'm going to tell you now, Wooly? Mayo have got to so many All-Ireland finals in the last 20 years, but they've never won one.
Well, that's it, yeah.
No, so.
That's it. Can you not do these quick picks where you'd actually get paid out for 3 out of 4 results or something?
Is there an option, a payout option here?
There must be some bet where
we would need the payout option after 5 minutes
just
of each game.
Give me three quarters of the 13-1. Yeah. Can you not do something like that? Right, Stevie, come on, hit us with it.
Mine, I am down to three teams like last week, and I'm going for the handicaps in all of them. I'm going for Dublin -4 against Monaghan.
Can I stop you there? Because Monaghan, we've talked about on the show, we've had Conor McManus in the studio. They're a really, really good, solid team. They're good at home. They play a defensive system.
Yeah.
Why do you think Dublin are a good bet at -4?
Because if they hit fire like they did last week, they will just absolutely destroy teams. You know, Dublin are a much better team than Monaghan. Monaghan are a very, very good team, but Dublin are much better than them. I know Monaghan caused them serious problems last year in the league. Dublin just scraped across the line, but I can't see Monaghan getting the result. I'd be surprised. I do think it'll be a tough game and a tight game, but I think the last 20 minutes, because Monaghan have been playing, you know, a consistently 16, 17 players throughout the campaign, I just think Dublin's bench will maybe make a difference in the last 20 minutes of this game, and that's why I'm saying Dublin -4.
And I suppose when you look at it as well, Dublin aren't in the final yet. Loss to Dublin and suddenly Monaghan are in it, and Tyrone could be in it if to beat Kerry, or Donegal could be in it if to beat Mayo. Yeah, so look, it's actually very rare you see Dublin at such a low handicap.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So my next one is Cork -3. They're playing at home to Down. Conlon doesn't seem to think that they've much to play for, but I certainly do believe that they've a lot to play for. You know, I believe it's an opportunity for them to get into the starting 15 for the championship. So
just on Cork there, I've been on to Brian Hurley. I was trying to get him on the show for today's show, but he's away in England, and he'll be on the show at some stage next week. He had an absolutely horrific hamstring injury. Yeah. It's been pulled off the bone, and that's just, he's not back a month after being back from a different horrific injury. So it'll be interesting. He's only 24 and he's a brilliant player I love watching when you're talking about movement and bravery and everything. So yeah, we'll hope to talk to him.
Well, he's got, I suppose, plenty of motivation with the likes of Colm O'Neill as a teammate who's
back in
through
form
horrific
now.
Horrific injuries himself. So my last team in the accumulator is Armagh -1. It's going to be a tough game for them, but I just believe that they might have enough firepower to get across the line. The other one I was going to include in it, and it would have been an absolute banker, is Liverpool -2 against Everton.
I thought he was going to say that either.
Really looking forward to it.
So those three teams actually bring it up to about 7.5-1.
Well, okay, look, do you know what? We'll let you throw Liverpool -2 in there.
We'll throw a soccer one in there. We aren't experts on it. I'm only saying that because I'm actually going over to it. But
are you going over?
I am, yeah.
Right, okay. I've been in Anfield once actually, and I was disappointed with the atmosphere. I was at a Merseyside derby, an FA Cup. Do you remember Everton equalised late and they won the replay with Gosling?
Right. Yeah.
Very rare you see Everton beating Liverpool, that I've seen Everton beating Liverpool, but I was disappointed with the atmosphere on the ground because you hear so much about it. I'm not being anti-Liverpool here, but I thought it was going to be a lot more electric for an FA Cup.
For the right occasion and the right match, it certainly is an electric atmosphere, absolutely, yeah.
Right, okay. Right, we'll be watching out for that, and it's a 12:30 kickoff as well, so we can't be drunk for it. So there'll be no drunken tweets for me in the lead up to that. Right, that's all we have time for. Don't forget we have a hurling show that's out today as well. Check that out. And also the Hard Yards Rugby podcast is out today too, so search for them. But let's go hurling or football show first, hurling show second, and Hard Yards third.
Are you going to say the opposite then for the hurling one?
Very good. I did that one last week, Colin. Very well. Okay, listen, we'll see you on Monday for a review show. Good luck.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.